Most marketing advice obsesses over the 10% that's changing. Joe Glover thinks that's backwards. Joe's the co-founder of the Marketing Meetup, and he says that 90% of marketing doesn't change, even in an AI world. In this episode, we get into what actually lasts: care, clarity, and culture. Plus, the weirdly universal thing that no one admits: starting a business with a little bit of revenge in your heart might not be a bad thing. And if you've ever tried to build community or events, Joe shares the simplest framework I've ever heard for making people show up and come back on this episode of Talking Too Loud. Well, I'm really excited that you're here, and I have to start by asking, what's got you talking too loud today, Joe?
You know, this show is probably the least appropriate show for me to be on ever, because I don't think I've ever spoken too loud. In fact,
doesn't seem like that.
Too soft.
I'm famed for speaking too quietly. In fact, the most common question that's directed my way is sorry, what? but actually, there's probably a seriousness in that, which is that the thing which I feel passionate about outside of marketing is just showing up with quiet confidence. Like, I've been on a journey of it, you know, over my career, where I've sort of spent time apologetically sort of showing up and hiding in corners and not contributing in meetings, etc. But you know what? I'm in a space right now. It's probably because I'm getting old. 34, you know, it was my birthday.
Oh, you're so old now.
So old. You're ancient. The two 40-plus-year-olds in the room.
you two, maybe in your 40s, but you look...
We're aging like fine wine.
Yeah. Absolutely wonderful. But I'm done apologizing for being quiet. I'm happy.
Nice.
With
Hell yeah.
I'm. So yeah, quiet confidence.
Love that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I don't think, Chris, you do not have quiet confidence. You have loud confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was at some event night with a bunch of people that I didn't know. And someone asked some question, and it was like not me on a panel. It was like 12 of us, like in a conversation. This person didn't know me. And I started answering the question. And then I answer it, and they're like, "You seem so confident. Why are you so confident in this?" And I was like, and then I like went on explaining, and they're like, "Okay, so you've done this a few times." I'm like, "Yeah, so I've done it. That worked. I've done it. It's worked. I'm sorry, but like, I'll tell you what I don't know also, but I know this thing."
I love that. Well, you know, and it's, I think there is a skill in, you know what I think, actually, I think it's more about you showing up as you. I actually don't think I don't think it's anything to do with the volume in which you would have presented yourself in that moment.
100%.
It is, you know, you doing you, you showing up as you, and people recognize that, you know, and people go, yeah, cool. He knows what he's talking about.
And like trusting that the prep and work that goes into these types of conversations, panels, webinars, that you do all this prep, you make sure you have the topics, you make sure you have the questions, and then you actually just let yourself go, which is very, very hard to do at first. But ultimately, it's like what we are attracted to.
It's that thing, isn't it? You know, the Reddit thing, explain it like I'm five. And people who don't know what they're talking about can't explain it like someone is five.
Totally.
People who do know what they're talking about, you know, we'll use a sentence or two, or they'll use more than that, but it's because they're passionate and they're excited about it. But, you know, if you've got that ability to be concise, to be precise, then I don't know, I think that is a sign of expertise, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Brevity. The soul of wit.
The soul of wit.
Had to drop Shakespeare somewhere.
Poetic.
Well, Joe, look, I want to go into a little bit deeper into the expertise here and talk about what's happening in marketing today. Obviously, things are moving crazy fast. And like what tactics, I'll say, you should use are like changing. So my question is, as someone who manages and has built this amazing community of marketers, is thinking about marketing all the time, has been a marketer for a long time, what aspects of marketing do you think really are going to last in this world that we're in? Like what stayed true as everything else is shifting around it? What do you see today?
I love that question. So I'd put a number on it. It's probably sort of like 90% stays true, right? I was yield and bow to the person who sort of taught me about the thing which stays the same, which is a professor over here, a guy called Mark Ritson. Ritson speaks about three things. He speaks about diagnosis, strategy, and tactics. So at the diagnosis stage, that's market research. That's getting our head screwed on the right way about marketing, which is understanding that it's about the market. It's about human beings. It's about understanding what they need. And actually, it's nothing about your organization. And I think that's a really, really important point, because even as that, as a beginning orientation, like the amount of times even I in my career have started a sentence with, I'm so excited to announce, and then go, who cares whether I'm excited to announce? It's about them, you know, is the beginning of a headspace. So market research, understand those people. And then strategy, you know, this is the other bit which stays the same. What are you trying to achieve? Who are you trying to achieve it for? So who are your audience? And what is the goal you're trying to achieve as a marketer? If you've got those things sort of laid out, so you got your segmentation, your targeting, and your positioning, very business school, I appreciate it. But these are the things which sort of sit at the heart of it. Because ultimately, what that gives is consistency, right? I think, to use another analogy, and again, I refer to Ritson for this, nobody is walking down the street and thinking about the marketing meetup. They're probably thinking about their bills. They're thinking about the lottery numbers. They're thinking about whether they picked up the kids from school. You know, hopefully they have, if they're supposed to. They're thinking about those things. And then you may get three brain cells dedicated to your brand. And our job as marketers is to have those three brain cells dedicated to our brand, being the brain cells we want dedicated to that brand. So when someone thinks about our business, they go, ah, Wistia. Or they go, ah, marketer meetup. And that's for the point where they purchase. And so there is an awful lot that stays the same. At marketing, within marketing, 90% of it stays the same. The 10% changes, which is where we spend a lot of time, which is also the exciting bit as well. Well, in fact, I find the 90% more interesting, but the 10% is the bit which moves very fast.
Yeah, and you think it's just because it's changing, that's why everyone's so attracted to it?
Yeah, we love change. We're absolute magpies. Like, we love change so much. It's so shiny, and it's easy to talk about on LinkedIn. It's easy to talk about on social media.
Yeah.
But like the 90%, that's the stuff which is prescient right now.
Yeah. I love that. When you saw the opportunity to build the marketing meetup, so what did you see? Like what made it obvious to you that there was this opportunity to go out and do the 90% of building this thing? And like, what was changing that made you think, this is what I should do? This is why there's a hole in marketing culture that I can help fill.
Can I do a secret? And sort of,
we encourage all secrets.
We love secrets.
No, I just ignored all of the advice that I've just given, which is that there is something special called founder's prerogative, right? and so, the context coming in for today's conversation is like, I'm super fans of the two of you. I'm super fans of Wistia. So my energy level is way higher than it would be on any given Tuesday. But I walk into any room and I am freaking terrified. I'm terrified of the social interaction. I have a thimble-sized social battery. And I also think it's a bit of a shame, you know, when you like get in a conversation and one or two things happen. The first thing that will happen is like you say, hi, I'm Joe. And you know that they're hearing, hi, I'm the founder of the marketing meetup. My budget is whatever. Or the other thing that happens is if they hear that bit, then they start looking over your shoulder at the next important person in the room. And I thought that was a shame. I just thought it was a shame because like I have an ego. I like to think I have something to add. And at 24, I was like, I'm better than my job title. If someone gave me a chance, and that's absolutely listened. And so I didn't do market research. I didn't write down my positioning. I just started running an event in a canteen in Cambridge. My old boss used to say the original Cambridge, which is slightly contentious.
Yeah. It is. So. Yeah.
Maybe not contentious, but slightly provocative. But yeah, I ignored all of the good marketing theory and kind of just did a thing. And that thing happened to turn out quite well.
And you just did it because it was literally, you felt like, hey, I am better than my job title. I am better than the options I have in front of me. Like, what am I doing? Like, because I feel like it's, at least for me, that really resonates. Like, as you were talking about that, it brought me back to a time when I was the production assistant on a commercial shoot. Yeah. Right after I graduated college, and I had made all these short films. I had won an award for one of them that I was like really excited about. And I was like, I'm going to be a filmmaker. And then I'm on this shoot and these guys were like treating me like crap and telling me literally like, you don't know what you're doing. And I'm like, no. I've shot on film. Like I've done these things. I remember this feeling of like, no, I'm going to show them, like, I'm just going to do my own thing. And that was in there at a very deep part of me when I started Wistia was like around like proving some of these people wrong. So I just think it's really relatable.
Totally. It's funny because like, I definitely used that sort of like phrasing when I was speaking through the story there, didn't I? And I don't think I realized that. I don't think I've ever said it out loud, you know, like fully acknowledging my ego. I've always wanted to be a business owner. Like,
yeah,
we have The Apprentice over here in the UK as well. And that was my only education around what business was. And that was something I needed to get rid of quite quick. But like the idea of being a business owner was something I always wanted. And yeah, maybe on a subconscious level. I don't think I've ever spoken about it in this way before, but yeah.
That's cool. But it's human. And I think it's, you know.
So human.
There's another part of it that I've realized is like, if you want to prove people wrong or eventually prove to yourself that you can do something, the thing that's kind of nice about that is that it can be a motivator for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like it's not fleeting usually. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I hope I do this for a month. So you have the chip on your shoulder and you want to prove people wrong. It's like, well, I better prove them wrong.
Yeah.
It was funny because like when we started, we literally had the plan. And I've said this before, but I still kind of can't believe it because I've just like, it was so the sense of time as someone I've done this almost, it'll be 20 years in June that I've done Wistia. But when we started, we didn't really tell anyone what we were doing. And we didn't really tell our friends because we thought we have enough money to last 6 months. So we will do this and it'll either be successful or we'll just pretend it never happened. We won't tell. We didn't fail. Like we'll just fail in obscurity. Like no one will know because it was so much about like proving to ourselves and to others who I don't think cared at all. By the way, I don't think anybody else cared at all, but proving to ourselves that we could do it. And then it was like, once we were in it and it was 6 months and I was like, well, this is actually fun and it's really hard, but like that motivation was still there.
How do you relate to that now? So if I said, so in speaking about that there, you said about proving it to myself that I can do it. Mm-hmm. If I ask you the question, have you done it 20 years in, how do you reflect on that?
The honest answer is that there have been times I have felt I have proven to myself that I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I find that wherever you are, you're there. And so like you're doing it. Like I can remember when we hit 10 employees and I thought to myself, can I manage a business with 10 employees? And then we'd been 10 employees for like 3 months, 4 months. I was like, I think I can do it. And then it was like, that kept happening. But when you have a business with 10 employees and it feels like it's going well, you start dreaming bigger. And so that's the funny thing about it is like, there's been moments when I'm like, yes, oh my God, I can't believe this is unbelievable. And then it's also really easy to look at and be like, but why am I not like that? Why are we not doing that? Like, why? Like, well, there's all these other things I want to accomplish. And so it is a moving target, I think. And if it wasn't, I would probably not be doing it anymore. Because I think it's like, I actually like it. Like, I think that's the funny thing about it is like, I like proving to myself that I can accomplish more. Like, I find the journey fun. And, you know, as we were talking about before, it's like, if you're working with great people, it is actually fun even when it's hard. Like when I look back on the hardest moments we've had, that's usually where I learn the most. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually really thankful for them, even if they're horrific when they're occurring. And, you know, and so I don't know if that answers it, but that is like, I'm extremely proud of what we've built. And I do think, yes, objectively, you could say we've definitely accomplished the original goal and accomplished many of our goals. And I dream of doing much more. And I think if you're paying close attention to Wistia, you can see the amount of things we're shipping and trying to do and products we're solving. And there's a lot. And it's like not by accident that we're doing it, you know?
Love that. I love that so much. And you know what I love about it as much as anything else is that some of it is quite foreign to me. I wouldn't say that I share your mindset on everything, which is actually really nice. You know, when you get exposed to other people's perspectives and you're like, oh, that's actually like teaching stuff.
Yeah, it's refreshing. Yeah.
Totally. It is funny on the story of sort of proving to other people. It is funny because like I definitely held on to that for a little while. I remember there was this one guy I met at a networking event. It was relatively early days, but he was well known in the local area. And I remember describing the marketing meetup to him. He literally turned on his heels halfway through the conversation and walked away.
Oh no, he didn't.
And I held on to that for such a long time. Like genuinely, I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong. Anyway, I think this is a both story, right? Because two things happened. The first is that we did all right. You know, we've done all right. And when I'm sort of explaining that your mindset is kind of foreign to me in a way, Chris, it's because like, I don't think I've ever accepted a sense of like, we've made it and sort of like, oh, we've made this step. So we make it to the next one. I've got this existential dread that will go on
interesting.
In my being at all times.
Yeah.
But the other is that this particular chap, you know, he came to a point where he was like, he wasn't doing so well himself. And it was actually in that moment there where I was like, Blumenek, I don't wish harm on you. Because the thing that I wanted to turn around and do one day was say, F you. If I'm being really honest, F you, I made it.
Yeah.
The second I found out he weren't doing too well, I was like, I don't want that for you. You know, I don't want that for anyone. And it was kind of just an interesting thing. And it was a motivating factor, but then it was released. And you kind of go through cycle of it, right? Which is just really interesting. Dude.
It's so real. I mean, I'm sure we all have stories like that. And I could think of a VC we talked to. He said, this is never going to be a big business and it's going to be super small. We've already looked at space and just wrote it off. And he was like, came from like a super friendly connection.
Right.
And he was like such a and I was like, I will prove this guy wrong.
Yeah.
And then eventually I'm like, and I can think of specific people I want to prove wrong. Mm-hmm. And I had the same exact experience as you is like, well, actually not exact, very similar experience of like, oh, some of these people, like, I feel really bad for what ended up happening with them. And then also some of them were so lovely when I got to know them later and were so encouraging. And it's like, I had made this in my mind, this idea that these people were not rooting for me and were maybe even actively rooting against me. And they weren't thinking about me at all. And then when they, you know, later were so lovely and kind and nice and all these things, it really changed. Honestly, it changed my perspective on like what my high school experience was, what moments of my college. It really changed my perspective of like, hey, we're all out there. We're all trying to figure out our own way. We all have an ego. We all want to do like interesting things and be, you know, it's just so, so relatable. I think it's just like, I feel so lucky that it turned into starting a company. You know, I feel grateful like every day that.
That
fortunately we took that and turned it into something.
And cool. So I was lucky a little while ago. I'm pretty sure you probably know him personally, Derek Sivers. So he founded CD Baby a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't know him personally, but I know of his work.
So I had the privilege of interviewing him a little while ago. And about 8 minutes into the interview, he sort of went quiet for a moment and he went, I've never thought of it that way before. And it was one of the best moments I've ever had as an interviewer because I kind of had that thing. And I think in a kind of way, in this conversation, I've kind of just had the same thing, right? Because in a way, revenge is like, revenge, and I'm going to use that like both literally and not literally, is a great motivator to get started in business. But actually, if you can decouple it from the personal and sort of say, I want to prove the world wrong, that's a great fuel. But maybe not making it about other people, as you sort of described, than being nice and sort of having that. And actually, you could probably get the best of both worlds in a way. And it's kind of.
I mean, because it can eventually turn incredibly positive because you start looking at it as like, oh, I get to help these other people. I get to like have these employees and like help scale the business and put them in a position to help us grow and find opportunities and help customers. And, you know, there's like the rush of doing that. I mean, Sylvie has been going on this thing recently. Of being so pumped on some of the stuff that she's doing and some of the stuff we're doing with Wistia, and she called me
up. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah.
I did call him. I went to like a podcasting meetup and people were talking about like different recording platforms. And obviously we record Talking Too Loud inside of Wistia. And I used to be a Riverside person and have since made the switch. and I was like buzzing. Like I was just like, oh, Wistia. And I looked and sounded probably like crazy. Like I had the crazy look in my eye. But it was this very unique sensation of being able to like really like stand behind something and like genuinely know it could solve a problem for somebody. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen to me often, where it's just like, whoa, the harmony of this moment is really here. But on the proof thing, I think the thing that I'm hearing from both of you is like, yeah, proof and revenge even can be a great motivator. I like a revenge story is great.
A little bit of revenge here or there, yeah.
But like the actual learning that lets you get to that proof softens you a little bit and softens that revenge. And so like the humility of actually going through the process lets you come out on the other side and say like, yeah, it's not about you. It's like,
yeah,
it's totally about the journey.
It's such a cheesy quote, but it's never about the goal. It's about the journey, the person on the journey. And like, I know. I'm cringing. I'm cringing even thinking.
I know, but it's real. It's real, guys. Sometimes cringe is real.
That's good. I'll pick up one thing, and I appreciate I'm completely derailing things, but like, I just
want totally to fine. We love it.
We love it.
Well, last week I gave a talk at the marketing meetup in Cambridge. It was a bit of a soapbox talk, as in standing on my soapbox. And I know that soapbox is probably a word that has a lot of connotations for you on your own journey as well. But this particular talk was only 20 minutes, but it was 20 minutes dedicated to the topic of care in marketing. And it was something that I've realized sits very core to my being, really, and the way that I choose to show up as a person in the world, but also a profession in the world. And I sort of broke it down into a few things, which was like care about standards, as in like wanting to do a good job, wanting to understand the job, care about people, so caring about the people you serve, understanding who they are, etc. Knowing when not to care. So this is about like not doing the tactical stuff just for the sake of the tactical stuff, but also allowing some relationships which are no longer serving you in a not unpleasant way, but just like a whatever, to sort of let those go, because that's definitely part of the journey as well. And then caring when it's hard sometimes to care, which is exhibited in like we all got busy jobs, we're all busy marketers, but there's also a lot of context for our roles around accessibility, about climate, around etc. And sometimes those things are harder to care about when you're very busy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sylvie, when I hear you describe your excited moment there, yeah, the thing which I'm hearing as much as anything, and you displayed it in two ways, is care about the craft, as in I'm excited about this from a Wistia perspective. But then you also said this solves a real problem for people. And I just think that's absolutely gorgeous. I think that's like, as a marketer, as a exhibit of marketing, I think that's wicked. And I just want to say I really admire that, because that's really cool.
I mean, it's like I said, it was a genuinely new feeling for me. And it's kind of like when I called Chris, he was like, it's like you're on a high, right? And I was like, that's how I feel, like buzzing. So have you had that? I'm sure you've had many moments, but is there a recent moment with the marketing meetup where you felt like that sort of buzzing excitedness?
Yeah, definitely. I'll relate it to another quote as well, which is like, my co-founder says, when it looks like you're having fun, then other people want to join in. And so like, we do our best every day to sort of think like that. And actually, I have to work pretty hard on that, because that's not necessarily my personality. But like, he forces me into that space in a very good way. And this kind of goes full circle in our conversation to a certain extent, because the only moment I've really allowed myself to sit back and go, this is cool, I'm really enjoying this, is at our conference last year. And so I've been working on TMM now for 10 years. It'll be 10 years this year. And we're growing it to the point of 211 events around the world, which is great. So then meetup style events and webinars and stuff like that. You know, it's silly to me, but in a good way. But then we had our big sort of flagship event in the shadow of Westminster Abbey, which I appreciate is the most British place in the entire world, in March last year. And I just stood on stage and I looked out at the community. There was 400 people there on that day. I was like, I know you, I know you, I know you. And these are all people that were sort of picked up along the journey. And they showed up and they looked after each other. And it was like a cultural experience of TMM. It was like, this is just wicked. And that, I do think there's probably a bit of magic around events, which is like, they're a discrete moment of time, 9 till 5. You can create what you want to create and you can experience it. And like, for me, that was like amazing. The afterwards was just funny to me though, because I thought we were so drained that evening. Like we got back to the hotel and we literally slumped in our chairs, the whole team did. And then the next week I was like, I'm fine. I feel great. And I was like, I'm not getting the after event hangover. It actually hit 3 weeks later when I'm like, I'm so depressed right now.
Like the high stayed longer than you thought it would, basically. That's Yeah. There's something about those in-person events that it kind of proves to you what you saw online. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, we had 300 people at this thing. That's a fair amount of people to pay attention to something in real time. But it doesn't feel the same as when you're standing in front of a room of 300 people and they're paying attention and you're like, wait a second. Those people online are real. This is all real. I've had moments like that where the same thing, where it's like being at an in-person event and recognizing, whoa, this is really impacting people. Mm. Yeah, I think it's just very cool. And I'm going to bring us back a little bit to where we started here, just because I think this is this is super interesting. And we're talking about a lot of that 90%. Right? Mm-hmm. The motivation, the storytelling, bringing people together. But I want to just make sure at the time we have, we talk a little bit about the events specifically and how you do this. So how do you do this? How do you bring all these people together? How do you get them to give you the time? How do you get them to find this moment where they say, yes, I want to spend my time with you. I want to travel to you. I want to buy a ticket. I want to change, disrupt my life. And I want to give one more piece of context before you answer, which is, I think a lot of companies are going to be doing a lot more events is my mm-hmm. bet. And mm-hmm. I think in this world where you can't tell what's real online or not anymore, but you want to trust what you're hearing. It seems like one of the main ways that's going to happen is getting folks in person and doing exactly what you're doing. So how do you do this?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I definitely hear that in the discourse, and we've ended up in this space by accident rather than design, but I'm happy with it. Nonetheless, when you ask the question, the first thing my head goes to is story, really. And I know that's such a marketer's answer, but I think it's so important. So when I introduce the marketing meetup, I'll always speak about my quieter disposition. I'll speak about discomfort at attending networking events. And the story will lead to a place. And so I started running an event where we encourage people to come in to listen, say hello, and be positively lovely. And so you state the problem, you state the solution. And then, now we have the benefit of 10 years of context, which is the journey. And so I say, we're now 211 events, 50,000 marketers in the community, 211,000 on social media, et cetera, et cetera. And people, I think a lot of people, the impact of that story is that they hear my quiet demeanor and then they hear about the journey. And usually there's a moment of surprise. And as an emotion, surprise should be one that we try to build into our stories because that's something that moves folks. Mm. The reason why the story is important is because then it sort of feeds everything else from if we're applying marketing theory things to it, to a really strong positioning point, which is I am uncomfortable. at an event. And so I would like to provide a space where people feel comfortable. And in that drops out a series of communications. You are welcome. Come here by yourself and hopefully you'll leave with a friend. Listen, say hello, and be positively lovely. So we codified some values and behaviors that were encouraging. And then doing these on repeat. Now, the reason I think I speak about each of these things is that what we do isn't special. Like, events is a vacuum of a space that is to be filled with the culture that you would like to fill it with. And so when I think about myself, I often think of myself rather than a community builder or an events runner. I think of myself as someone who leads culture and allows the community to fill those spaces. And so that's quite a philosophical view. I think there's some more pragmatic stuff that we can start doing. I see some people run events and webinars, and they just vastly overcomplicate things. So one of the things that we like to do with most of our webinars in particular, which are the things which I curate myself, is I'll usually have something which is like how to as the prefix for the title of the event. So how to do AI, how to save time using AI for marketers. I'll usually then have three takeaway points that folks can walk away with. And so there's a real clarity to that thing, which is here is an exchange of time in exchange mm-hmm. for whatever it may be. The important thing there as well, when you're thinking about your format, is also thinking about what value is going to be exchanged. So we think about webinars. At TMM, we often speak about it as there being there for education, whereas our in-person events, we speak about connection. And so with that knowledge, we can spend our time educating with the webinars, and we can spend our time optimizing the experience of connection at in-person stuff. The last thing I'll probably point to is at TMM, we have something called the Magic Moments, which is 10 magic moments that will take place at every TMM event. And so the structure of TMM is that we have four of us in the middle. So our workforce is four people, but then we have about 90 organizers around the world. And so we can't attend every event, obviously. So what we have done is we've set a culture. We've spoken about the story. We've encouraged people to do that. But then on a very practical level, what we've said is like, these are the 10 moments that make a TMM event a TMM event. And so we've gone through like the first moment when someone walks through the door, are they being welcomed with a big smile? Are the values communicated? Are the sponsors met? All these things which seem like micro moments, but if you get them right and they're based in that story about discomfort, it makes this congruent experience, which all of a sudden moves the thing that you are doing, which is not interesting, into a thing that only you can do. And at that point, it becomes very interesting indeed.
I love that.
Yeah, that's, I feel like that'll be clipped. I think what you just described is broke down why in-person events should exist, why mm-hmm. online events should exist, what the expectations should be for both, and then also what differentiates them. And I love the framing of it being that people overcomplicate this stuff, because I think they do. And I mean, I've seen that with video forever, especially when if video feels hard to make, it's like, well, I better get a lot into this thing. It's so hard. So it's like, oh, it's definitely, it should go viral. And also it should be on my front page. And also it should be in my support. It's like, no, actually you need different goals for these different things. And if you do that, each thing is simpler, but it's more likely to work. And even just the how-to is like, I feel like very interesting in terms of saying like, yes, the webinars are just how-tos. And like, you're going to know, you're going to get takeaways on this topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know obviously that is tried and true to a degree, mm-hmm. but it's just so easy to think, well, we're doing this live event. What else do we need to cram into it? And then just start cramming in. And then suddenly the chance of it being successful, I think, go down.
Totally. You know, people are busy and it's, I think that clarity is just kind. I mean, it's actually a really Western perspective as well. So I've been reading about this at the moment, but certainly in UK and American cultures, the way our language works is that we prefer that more concise, direct stuff. And so particularly if we're operating in the environments that we do, like lean into our cultural biases as well. It's, you know, it's a very stereotypical thing. So mm-hmm. I think it's huge. I mean, the point that I'd make about what you've just said, Chris, is that like, I think we all want to feel like we're impressive, because like, we all want to think that we're special and stuff like that. But isn't it just refreshing when someone just speaks like a person sometimes? So it says, well, we're going to do this thing. We think it's cool. We think it's going to help. People go, yeah, it's cool. And yeah, right. That does seem like it'll help rather than sort of saying whatever. The last thing I'll say on that is, like, have you ever been to a marketing agency's website? Can you tell what a marketing agency ever does from their website? Like, we all do it in so many different ways. Like, it's just the way of the world. And so it's quite interesting when someone just like chills out and goes, yeah, this is what we're going to do. We'll probably have a nice time with it.
Keep it simple, stupid. You know? That's the tagline. Or keep it stupid simple.
Okay.
And now I'm making t-shirts.
I think maybe you should have it be just keep it stupid.
keep it stupid. I love it.
So what do you do? We basically just keep it stupid. No big deal. Do you think that's why do you think that's also why we are in a moment where it could look like all the content we see is like 7-second clips, but actually like long form podcasts are doing better than ever?
Yeah.
Where it's like the long form podcasts that you know you're going to sign up for this very long conversation. There's no hiding. It's real people. It's like actually back down to like, oh, if I happen to sit next to this person, yeah, some parts of the conversation I'd probably be really interested in. Some parts I wouldn't be exactly. But if the way that they talk is compelling because it's unique, then I will engage, you know?
Totally. Yeah. You know, I think there's space for it all, right? You know, it's just where, again, it goes back to that 90-10 in a way. I mean, I don't know how many hours I spend watching telly. I don't know how many hours I put the radio on, you know, but it's a lot. And it is with podcasts as well. I think these new things are in the moment because they're fresh and they're new, but it doesn't mean to say that there isn't space for those other things. It's just that we don't speak about them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I definitely agree with the contention, you know, podcasts is a form of what we've previously experienced with telly and radio, right? You know, and it's... Totally. A more personalized opportunity for that. But yeah, like, I think we live in the 7-second world, but we also live in a 3-hour world, and both are right. Both exist.
Yeah. If you were starting from scratch today, what's something you'd make sure that you like didn't do?
Well, one thing that comes to mind first. So I'm 34 now. I was 24 when I started the marketing meetup. And I think this is an important business lesson. Is there is no way that I could have started the marketing meetup and it be in the same shape as where I've ended up with it 10 years later. Now I'm 34. If I started today when I'm, if I was in 44, if that makes sense. The reason being.
I got lost.
You're saying you were able to start it at 24 and it's worked, but you think if you started at 34, you're not sure it would.
Exactly. Okay. That was a much better way of saying it.
Yeah, we'll use my intro. We'll just copy it.
Just clip it in. Yeah. Oh my God. The reason being, I've now got kids, now got a mortgage, blah, blah, blah. I spent the first 3-4 years of the marketing meetup running 6 events by myself each month in the evenings after my agency job. So there's no way I could have done that. And so to kind of transpose that experience is really, really important.
So when you're young and hungry,
totally
lean into it, right? Like,
totally.
You can take the risk because it doesn't affect your lifestyle the same way.
Right.
Exactly that. But if I was giving advice today to anyone starting a business, and it's the most boring advice in the entire world, I appreciate.
We can't wait. Let's go. What do we have?
It's just understand the idea of margins, which I know is such boring business advice, but like, I think so many people jump into businesses and they have £100,000 a year and they've made £1,000, or they get 10 years down their business and they're giving away all their equity and they've sold it for 10 million and they get £10, you know, and whatever it may be. And just doing sensible, boring things, finding out those opportunities on how to run a business that actually works and provides for your life is probably the thing which I didn't do when I first started. But if I was to start again today, I'd definitely be inspecting a lot harder, because at the end of the day, we put heart and soul into these things and they have to work. They have to work for ego reasons, but they have to work from lifestyle reasons, or bigger if you want to go beyond that. And so knowing what that business model is, if you're not going to pursue VC cash and have someone else payroll you forever, is going to be really, really important.
I think that's great advice, especially because it's so easy with the ego. And if you have like revenge at your heart when you're starting to focus on the wrong parts of it, which is like, oh, I'm going to show everyone I'm successful by raising lots of money, or I'm going to show everyone successful because I have so much revenue. Exactly. But it turns out you can actually make a lot of revenue pretty easily if you lose a ton of money doing it, right? Like if you open up a sandwich shop and it's $2 a sandwich, you're going to do incredible if it costs like $5 or $10 to make the sandwich. Yeah. Like people are, it's going to, word is going to get around. You're going to have a lot of people show up and you'll have a bunch of revenue and the margins will be so bad that you'll be out of business rapidly. And I just think it's, it is very easy to get caught up too with, I think, what you see online of like, oh, there's this crazy story and this crazy story of this hyper growth thing over here. And this person raised all this money and they've only been doing it for 6 months. And I think like, yeah, those, that's usually the exception. And you can get, hit the lottery in business. It just is like hitting the lottery. It's incredibly rare. And pegging yourself against somebody who does that is not very healthy and it causes you to make mistakes.
Everyone speaks about revenue. No one speaks about profit, which is wild in the grand scheme of it. So yeah, absolutely. Fully agree, Chris.
Joe, this has been a true delight. And I didn't even know where we were going to go with this conversation. And I'm so happy we went where we went and like talked about why you started your business, why I started my business, like having revenge in your heart and and how it can motivate you. And also just like, there's so many lessons in this. I hope people can pick up from the conversation on like what it takes to keep something going, what it takes to like care about your work, what it takes to build a great culture in the content and experiences you make. And so, yeah, I just really appreciate you coming on the show. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me. It's been something I've been looking forward to. So like I'm genuinely privileged and I'm grateful for the whole of Team Wistia for being in our world because you're doing good things and I love the way you're growing your business and I really admire that.
Oh, come on. You're so right. where can people connect with you, follow along? Like where should they find you?
So I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. Like it's not good. So LinkedIn is the first port of call for me personally. That being said, the Marketing Meetup operates weekly webinars. This all happens through the hub of our website, but we've got weekly webinars, we've got in-person events, we've got two podcasts, we've got a newsletter. And actually, if I do some behind the scenes for your listeners, then our big ambition for this year is looking to the States to run a lot more in-person events as well. And oh, so awesome. If great. Folks... would like to get in touch about that sort of stuff, then I'd love to have that conversation as well.
Awesome.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.